This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Stephen Mansfield. Stephen's one of the best leaders in healthcare and an all-around very good person as well, and probably as importantly to his leadership. He served as the CEO of Methodist Health System Dallas for 13-plus years or so, and just a really good person. We'll ask Steve a bunch of questions about healthcare and his thoughts and career. Steve, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
You bet. And thank you, Scott, for the introduction and the kind words. As Scott said, I spent my last 13 years as the CEO of Methodist Health System. I retired, or I really prefer the word redeployed. Around the 1st of April of this year, I have stayed on as president and CEO emeritus, but that ends at the end of this year. And so I'm looking forward to the next chapters in my life, but we are native Tennesseans. I really spent 47 years full-time in healthcare in three organizations, Baptist Health System in Memphis for 23 years, based in Memphis, in a variety of different CEO and executive roles, and then with Catholic Health Initiatives, I ran their Arkansas hospital market for 7 years, and then as we said, came to Dallas in 2006 to join Methodist. So I'm kind of an ecumenical CEO. I've been Baptist, Catholic, and finished up Methodist.
It's really an amazing career, and people, and you've impacted so many people so strongly. Take a moment and tell us about a couple career highlights that you've had, and maybe also a couple challenges. Up times, down times, a little bit of both.
Yeah, so you know, the highlights probably stand out in my mind, maybe even more than the challenges, though, you know, certainly all of us have both. But, you know, I think a highlight for me is that looking back, I think I changed roles 8 or 9 different times at a CEO level through my career. And I was followed each time I moved on by someone that had worked for me or been part of my team at some point. And that means a lot to me, you know, that in my wake, if you will, there are a lot of wonderful people that have stepped up and stood out in their own careers in the roles that they've had. And so that's very gratifying. And it certainly is a highlight for me. There's so many things I enjoyed about healthcare. I love turnarounds. All my positions pretty much were. Methodist probably was, frankly, the least challenged organization when I joined it. But I enjoyed the turnarounds. I love construction. You know, it's always exciting. I love doing deals. They're exhilarating. So those things were probably highlights. But I think really the thing that stands out is just the thousands of employees and positions and the hundreds of board members that I had the chance to work with through a career and continue to have a relationship with. You know, I just think some of the best people in the world are healthcare folks that migrate into healthcare, many of them for clinical reasons. It's a great industry to have had a chance to work in for 47 years. I feel so grateful for that. Challenges, you know, I think, healthcare itself is a pretty durable challenge. You know, when I look back at what we were working on in healthcare 47 years ago, there are too many things that were on that list that would still be on my list today. You know, it's just, it is a very entrenched, challenging industry to try to optimize the performance of at a global level. And so I would say I wish I could have had maybe more impact there. Trying to get public health and hospitals, physicians, payers, et cetera, aligned in a way that's in the best interest of the public and the customer is difficult to do because of the way our industry has grown up and the way it's financed. And I'll stop there and see if there might be a follow-up.
But do you think, though, that it's so interesting what you say is that the problems that you faced 30, 40 years ago are not too different than some of the big problems faced today. But is that just the nature of the beast of trying to provide a labor-intensive service to 325 million people? I mean, is it really something that the nation is doing wrong? Or is the nature that this is really just an ongoing evolutionary forever problem, an issue that has to be constantly worked on? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think there's some of both. You know, I mean, it's a good point. It is complex. I think the thing that is hard for me to get my mind around as far as how do you really make healthcare something that is the envy of the world. You know, most things American are the envy of the world. And I would say healthcare, if you're talking about someone who needs complex, acute medical treatment, I think we are the envy of the world. But when you look at percent of GDP and some of the other aspects, and particularly our public health metrics, I think that's what's the conundrum of all challenges is, you know, we just keep going in the wrong direction from the standpoint of obesity and diabetes as a percentage of our society and so many banes to mankind. I think I read something the other day that said we have twice the level of disability in our population at age 50 of any other industrialized nation. And that's a tremendous drag on our healthcare system. At the same time, we're trying to optimize the way we deliver healthcare. We have so much demand for healthcare that's uniquely American, frankly, because of our health metrics. And so that it's complex, and it is probably going. It is going to be ever an effort on our part. I think those of us in healthcare to continue to tweak the edges and work it and smooth it off and try to optimize it. I wish there was a magic bullet for healthcare, but I don't see that. I don't think there is. Others may think that, but I don't think that there really is.
You mentioned a couple of things that play partly into this issue of social determinants, that play partly into this issue of personal behavior, that have such an overwhelming impact on healthcare cost and coverage and everything else. You mentioned two things I find really, really interesting. The issue of personally taking care of oneself. If one smokes, drinks too much, weighs too much, has let themselves go too far, and so forth, those all have big impacts on overall healthcare costs in our country. There's not necessarily a lot that the actual healthcare system could do about those, because some of those really come back to personal choices and responsibility. You mentioned that sort of issue, and maybe I captured it in a different way, and not to place fault one place or the other. The other issue mentioned is being the envy of the world in terms of healthcare. And it's fascinating there, because as you and I have aged, our eyes have probably been opened to there are certain kinds of different care protocols or treatments in different countries that we find, much to our shock, are more advanced than in our own. And talk a little bit about that experience of, you know, why we're not the envy of the world. We are in parts and not in parts, but talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and I'm very open about this, that I have dealt with prostate cancer. I'm in remission, have been for several months, and hopefully will be the rest of, you know, my life. But through that experience, you know, a shock to me was how much of the research in the treatment of prostate cancer, and frankly, how many of the different diagnostic and therapeutic treatments were actually European. In their origin, and in some cases in their availability. And so that's, to me, that is outside of the delivery system to fix. That is a macro issue that our government needs to wrestle with so that medications and treatment protocols and so forth that seem to work themselves through the process more quickly in European nations, we need to mimic that a little bit better than we do. Let me stop there.
We have shared the same experience with a family member who has literally been going back and forth to Germany for cancer treatments for vaccines that are being done there that have a great success and at least, you know, pretty good success. And, you know, when you see these kind of things happen, you take away our iconoclastic view that we're the envy of the world in healthcare and see, like, no, they're doing broad research, advanced research in other places, and in some places they're ahead of us, some places they're not, but it certainly leaves you with a very different perspective on your question of why don't we have a health system that's completely the envy of the world? I mean, I think we've had similar experiences, you directly and me through a family member, that have really opened our eyes to an extent to how something is being done overseas are at a more advanced level than here.
Yes. Yeah. And that it shouldn't be that way. You know, my view, it really shouldn't. But there's got to be macro changes to our delivery system and also to the way we look at healthcare, I think, for us to be able to move that. And a lot of it goes back to who's, you know, follow the dollar. You know, there are some drugs, there are some technologies that are gored by innovation and new drugs and new technology, and slow walking those through the system is to the advantage of some. It's not to the advantage of the patient, but it's to the advantage of some on the other end of the dollar. And I hate to be, that sounds more cynical than I typically am, but it's very difficult to separate the way we do healthcare in America from the way we finance healthcare.
Fascinating perspective. And then, Stephen, the other perspective on this, you know, we've talked about there are some great positives, there are some great negatives to healthcare in America. What excites you about healthcare in America? Is there something that excites you today that you see that you're very positive about?
A lot. You know, I'm excited about the young, excited, energetic talent that continues to be drawn to healthcare, whether it's in medicine, physicians and other clinicians, or administratively, you know, young men and women that are coming out of their hospital MHA programs and other programs and coming into healthcare from an administrative perspective, and just the general talent. And then the technology that talent has available to it to address some of the things that were harder for us to address 20 years ago. And so I think the combination of both of those things causes me to be extremely sanguine about the potential for us to continue to evolve healthcare in a really constructive direction in our country. You know, we touched on this earlier. I mean, America is the envy of the world in so many areas. We need to be the envy of the world in all aspects of healthcare. And to me, that's the holy grail for all of us have been part of the field, are part of the field, and will be part of the field.
And when you talk about some of these advances and the amount of technology available and the movement towards precision medicine that really pinpoints working with somebody's own genetics to solve that disease or problem, those are things that are worthy of being excited about and how much the advances are coming along. So couldn't agree with you more, if I'm characterizing what you're saying correctly. The next question I have for you, Steve, you served as CEO for 13 years, and I've seen you operate as it fascinatingly so, as typically the prescription for success has been to be the dominant system in a neighborhood. You've not been the dominant system, but you've maintained a magnificently healthy system, even being a second, third, or fourth size system geographically in Dallas. And you've done a magnificent job of it, and it's not been the traditional prescription for success, but you've done great with it. What's the most important thing a CEO does, and what do you attribute the success of your leadership to, not just you, but your system to, when it could have easily become very troubled behind the Baylors of the world and the others of the world and so forth, but did a magnificent job of staying very strong?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. I do think that the organizations that I've had a chance to be part of have been strong, you know, culturally strong, financially strong, operationally strong. Sometimes in more difficult environments, and sometimes in environments that were a little bit easier. And Dallas is a challenging market in some respects because you do have larger systems, really, really large, and not just large, but well-run, effective health systems in our community. Conversely, unlike, for example, in the Arkansas market that I came here from, in that market, we had a larger market share than Methodist has here, but, it's a largely rural market. It's very, very dominated by Blue Cross Blue Shield. So commercial rates are very challenging for physicians and for hospitals. And so every market's a little bit different. And Dallas takes some things away, but it gives you other things, you know. And I've always said, you know, large systems can maybe run more a broader array of offensive plays, you know, from their playbook than we could. We may have a more constrained playbook, but the plays we do run, we have no excuse for not running as effectively or more so than they do. And so I think creating a culture that draws talent, you know, and retains it, because it's hard to, that's an area where it's hard to compete with larger systems in a market, because typically the larger the system, the more they pay for a given position. And so when I have a really talented chief operating officer or a person running human resources, you know, if they're really, really good at what they do, and they will be, have been, you know, there are a lot of people interested in pulling them away, you know, and trying to retain that talent sometimes is difficult. But maintaining a culture that's really, really healthy, making sure that you plan, you know, if I'm gifted anywhere, and I don't want to come across arrogant in saying this at all, but I think I can see further down the road maybe than maybe everyone does, and I don't know why necessarily, but being able to plan well and then spending a lot of time on executing the plan is a key part of what I've done everywhere that I've been. You know, we developed a beautiful plan, and then we really worked that plan hard, and we held ourselves accountable, and we're rewarded and we're penalized based on how we do with that. And it becomes our, you know, kind of a script that we run the organization from. So everybody kind of knows where we're going and what we're going to do. So we don't have a lot of wasted energy because we don't have extra resources. And then a strong sense of urgency to execute, you know, and then if you can get with 10,000 employees at Methodist, and if we can get all 10,000 of those employees excited about our mission, vision, values, our culture, and our strategy, and to give us discretionary effort to try to accomplish those things, then I would contend that, you know, in many respects, you can be as effective or more so than a larger competitor, because some of those things actually become more complex as an organization gets larger. And so, you know, there are pros and cons to both. And with Baptist, I ran a hospital for them that was the market leader. So I've had experience being in the largest hospital, and I've had experience competing with the largest hospitals. And I think to a large degree, you know, a lot of what works in either case, you know, is the same.
And so as I hear you talk, there's really three or four messages I pull out of it. It's on the strategy side, it's clarity of plan and executing of the plan and really staying focused on it and hoping you develop a good plan to begin with or a great plan to begin with, and then execution of it. And then on the people and talent side, it's a lot about creating the right culture, people that want to be there, want to work there, taking care of great people, working hard to retain great people, make sure the people and culture issues work well as well. And so great clarity of plan, execution on that plan, really focus on that plan, and then side by side, great people issues and culture issues, so you get a long-term team there and hopefully 10,000 people, but lots of people rolling in the right direction, in the same direction.
Yep, I agree. And as part of that, that strong sense of urgency, you know, just I always tried to lead, you know, and I wasn't always successful with this by any means, but with the level of humility as far as how I interacted with our people, but also with an iron will as far as how I interacted with, you know, our non-people assets and how we deployed those, used those, and made them effective, you know, for what we were trying to accomplish from a strategy perspective.
Well, you've done a great job with this mix of an incredibly talented, humble, nice person to go with a very directed, analytical, smart leadership. You've done a great job of combining qualities that often can be difficult to combine, and you always do it with great humility. It's so interesting. You do see so many leaders, so many CEOs that don't have that humility, and when they do have it, it really resonates well with people, and you're clearly of that character. One more final question. You've had a chance, and you said it great, to serve as CEO of the market leader and the NARP market leader. How do you assess strategy?
You know, I think you have to know yourself, you know, and you have to know what you can do, and you also have to know what you probably can't do. I mean, there, when you're not the market leader, there are some things that if you chase those, you spread yourself too thin, and it's not sufficiently accretive to what you're trying to accomplish anyway. And so I think I've always felt like strategy is not just knowing what to do, it's also knowing what not to do. And that's oftentimes the hardest thing because, you know, I had someone tell me years ago, I thought it was a compliment when I first heard it, but the more I thought about it, I'm not sure it totally is. But his point was, he said, Steve, you've never met a good idea you didn't like. Well, you know, on surface, that sounds like a good thing. But I think what he was saying to me early in my career is you're trying to take your organization in too many directions at the same time. You know, you can become, it's like our own heart, you know, a heartbeat of 65 or 70 is better than one that beats 200 times a minute and is in, you know, ventricular fibrillation. And you can do that as a leader to your organization where you get going in so many directions, trying to do so many different tangential things that your organization is frenetic with regard to knowing, you know, what to do. So trying to keep it simple, making sure you elucidate those things that must be done as organizational success metrics, and then consciously making the decision with your board and with your team that, you know, these are things that'd be nice to do, but we're not going to pursue this one. And here's why. And then, you know, like I've heard so many times, you know, it's the difference between try and triumph is the and that's the part that as a CEO of any organization, healthcare or otherwise, trying to get the out of your assets and particularly out of your human asset always is the challenge. You never get it perfect, but you continue to work on it for the benefit of your organization and mission and vision you have.
So again, in fascinating set of comments, lots of clarity, lots of simplicity, and then lots of positive attitude, lots of positiveness and diligence towards going after those simple and clear goals that you're going to have. And again, much rather embrace the leader that has lots of ideas and is so courageously enthusiastic and positive, but your point being, look, we can't chase 100 different things. We can do 3 or 4 of them really well. And we make that the core of our strategy, we'll succeed.
Yeah, I think that's right. And even in the large market, you know, even clinically, it'd be nice to have, but I think it's impractical sometimes to try to have the top service line in across the full spectrum, you know, because you're always competing with very talented folks on the other side, but you do need those areas of strength that give you an aura for the rest of your health system, and trying to make sure that you create those, even though you may be in a smaller market share position, is a critical must do. But it takes a lot of work, you know, and that's the advantage sometimes that larger health systems have versus their smaller competitors. But you know, I've been the person through my career that people have called sometimes to get a converse perspective to the idea of consolidation and merger. And it's really because, you know, I've been on both sides of that equation, and I see the pros and cons of being both large and small. And I think it's, you know, it's a polarity to manage. It's not a right or wrong. It's a polarity to manage. And that's been, I've been fortunate, you know, through my career to have a chance to do that in both the largest and also, in our case, the fourth in market share, DFW.
Thank you very much. And so a couple of thoughts there. As a health system, you have to be absolutely great at something. There's got to be some things that you're great at that really give your system a reason for being, a real purpose. And it could be a number of different things. It could be serving the community on primary care. It could be great in certain specialties, but you've got to be absolutely great at something. The other thing is, and you and I have seen so many health systems trip up on this, you can't try and be great at everything, or it's very hard
to at least.
Yeah. And we've seen, you and I have both seen, so many different systems of so many different sizes at one time go on the building spree for open heart programs and then see not being able to put the resources into that to make it work. Not every hospital is going to be a great leader in open heart surgery. Not every hospital is going to be the total market leader in oncology services. There are places that you have to decide we're going to stack our resources to be absolutely great at something, but we can't dabble in things that take greatness, that take real resources. You can't dabble in certain things and try and be great. And we've seen people try and do that. So
yes.
Fascinating perspective, Steve.
Yeah. Now you said it well.
I want to take a moment to wrap up. Thank you. You've had one of the most magnificent careers in healthcare. You've been on the Becker's Healthcare Advisory Board for now as long as I can remember. You've been just the most consistent and professional and smart and nice contributor of anybody that we've ever had. Just a pleasure to be with. In every environment, every time, you were a big supporter of Becker's Healthcare a decade ago when it wasn't that popular to be a big supporter. So we just find you to be one of the great people in healthcare that I've been fortunate to get to know. And we're so happy again to get a chance to spend a few minutes with you today.
Well, you're very kind. I appreciate the compliment. I tell, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm a huge fan of Becker's. I'm enamored, frankly, with the way that you've been able to generate alignment within your organization. I tell folks when I go to the Becker's conference that work for you, you know, where is the secret sauce? You guys are, I mean, they're owners. You know, everybody that works for Becker's own what you're trying to do there. And that's what's drawn me to Becker's and kept me there. I love the organization, Scott. You've done a great job.
Well, thank you. And the secret sauce is our CEO, Jessica Cole, our editors-in-chief, and our other leaders that built a great team. That's the secret sauce. I mean, Jess, Molly, Laura, Katie, so many of them, Abby and so forth, just great, great leaders,
yes.
Scott Jones, that have built a great team, and the team, you know, follows their lead. And they work at it hard.
Yep.
But, Steve, thank you so much again for your time today. Just a pleasure.
My pleasure as well, Scott. Thank you.